As Maria Rainier Rilke says in Letters to a Young Poet, try to love the questions themselves as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign tongue. Don't search for the answers, which could not be given to you now, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. Having hit a wall, I approach my father with questions about our ancestry, only to discover that he is irritated by my inquiries. And so I stop asking him questions. The next step, I assume, is to go to my mom's older sisters and ask them the questions. But like my father, they too are vague and feign ignorance. In hindsight, I realize that their vagueness was an escape. They didn't want to be the one to break the news to me. Although my ancestral journey has kept me occupied and distracted from grieving the loss of my mother, each time that I resurface to remember that my mother is gone, I spiral back into grief. And so, like Alice, I fall, and I keep falling. Down, down, down. After hitting my bottom, a place of hopeless indifference, I succumb to stay there for a few years, believing that I will never find my way out again. Fortunately for me, life had other plans. Just when I think this is it, my grief unfolds into a place of hopeful imagining, an unfolding that leads to academia, a place that, without knowing it, leads me to the answers I have been looking for. It is a place that calls me to attention. It is a place that awakens me.
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow, 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 follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick, follow the yellow brick, follow the yellow brick road. You're off to see the wizard.
On my first night of classes, my classmates and I are introduced to the work of Karen Myers and Living Inquiry. A practice that asks that we reflect upon our lives and document our lived experience. And so begins the process of unraveling my life's story, of taking it apart and putting it back together again. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men put Humpty Dumpty back together again. As the writing unfolded in this class, and as I focused on writing the Living Inquiry, much of my life unfolded, many aspects of my life that I had forgotten, repressed, denied, packed away in boxes. It all came rushing back. And so, as I engaged in the work of Dr. Lynn Fells in performative inquiry, I began to incorporate the data findings of my lived experience into my work in radio broadcasting. As lost moments surface, a path is laid in the walking, a journey for my words to travel upon and towards. Or, as Annie Dillard suggests, I am digging a trench that my words will follow so my writing can forge its path, so that my story can find its way. I am making connections with music, memory, and memoir.
I can still remember when I bought my first guitar. I remember just how good the feeling was. Put it proudly in my car, and I played my friends a thousand times my two-song repertoire. And I told my mom her oldest son was gonna be a star. I bought all the Beatle records, and I tried to sound like Paul. I bought all the old Buddy Hollies, the 78s and all. And I sat by my record player, playing every song they played. And I watched them all on TV, every move they made. Rock and roll, I gave you all the best years of my life. The dreamy sunny Sundays, all the magic moonlit nights. I was so busy in the back room, writing love songs to you while you were changing your direction. I never even knew that I was always one step behind.
As I gather my personal collections of songs with a lyrical soundscape that reflects my life, I see that this musical repertoire is a living biography that will never end.
The long and winding road. I've seen that road before. It always leads me here. Lead me to your door.
As my thesis takes form, I weave the living inquiry with lost moments and radio tales, and then illustrate how the performative inquiry breathes life into my text to illuminate and unfold identity. Further to this process, I am surprised to find myself on unfamiliar ground when new identity-laden information is presented in the latter stages of my thesis writing. The content I refer to, which is related to my previous inquiries into my familial ancestry, as was noted earlier in this radio tale, led me to an ancestral DNA test. The results confirmed that my father is not my biological father.
Reborn in sheer rain, spat out on new terrain, unsure, unconvincing, this faint and shaky hour. Without a hand, faint.
While this new information doesn't change the content of my academic findings to date, it changes many of the filters that I use to get to these findings. For instance, my lived experience filter is altered. I now have an explanation for other people's behavior. One, the reason my father treated me as though I were guilty of something. Two, the reason why my dad's racist relatives treated me like I was outside of the family. Three, why some of my aunts whispered about me and my mom. I didn't know. And four, why some of my cousins and some of the neighborhood kids teased me and told me I was adopted, that my parents hadn't wanted me, that I was an Indian child, that I wasn't an Indian child, that I was just left somewhere, that my parents threw me away. You know how kids can be. I heard so many things when I was little. Only now that I know that my father wasn't my father, all of that makes sense. All of it. And although they didn't get everything right, they got the basis of it right. There was so much whispering and there were so many stories. Stories that would take many years for me to piece together. Knowing what I now know, it changes things for me. It changes my perspective and makes me understand things differently. Although I can't go back and live things differently, having things make sense helps me to be more at ease with the past. I also understand my father differently. I now understand why he looked at me sideways, as though I were guilty of something, as though I had done something wrong. He was a man who couldn't hide his pain, his anger, his heartache. He was a man without a poker face. He wore his anger on his face and his heart on his sleeve. And come hell or high water, he didn't try to hide either. I think the saddest part about finding out that my dad was not my biological father is the shame that he would have carried about this. Although my mom wasn't a woman whose character led her to have affairs, her mental illness was of the sort that she had mania-induced flings. The sad part about her promiscuity is that my mom must have also felt deep shame about this, which in turn would have fed into her depression and her low self-esteem. And the even sadder part of it all is that my parents didn't get out from under their shame and their pain to move past it. Consequently, they kept living it again and again, and they never got beyond it.
For the river.
Like all underprivileged groups, their rise from the ashes takes longer, as does clawing their way out of their bottomless pit of hopelessness and shame. And so, for many, they are left to fend for themselves, with many remaining forever on the outside, looking in. To further illuminate this idea of being on the outside, looking in, we look to British songwriter Bernie Taupin's depiction of such class divisions in the song Mona Lisas and Mad Hatters. This metaphorical song was released on Elton John's 1972 album Honky Chateau. The song, which is Taupin's take on New York City after hearing a gun go off near his hotel window during his first visit to the city. It also illustrates how people who don't follow their dreams are left standing at the edge, on the outside looking in, while the privileged who do not always see the big picture are left to write history. While the privileged takes the cake and calls the shots, the underdog takes his place on the edge, to scrounge for crumbs and to wait for marching orders, living lives of quiet despair. In having discovered wide awakeness in grad school, to unravel my lived experience, I have been inspired to explore how music weaves itself throughout my life to illuminate a musical soundscape interspersed with a multitude of lost moments. After these lost moments intertwined with other lost moments, they were further explored through a performative inquiry in the realm of radio broadcasting. This process breathed life into text and audio to solidify as radio tales. As a result, the compilation of the living inquiry, the lost moments, and the radio tales becomes a living document, which in turn reflects the unfolding of a living identity. Makes me wonder, why did it take me so long to get here? Little did I realize that by documenting the living inquiry and then exploring it further through the performative inquiry, that I would get to this place of quiet, reflective understanding. I am so grateful. After so many half-finished dreams, dead ends, and questions about which way to go when I hit the fork in the road, it is such a gift.
Now I know Spanish Harlem are not just pretty words to say. Rich man can't ride. on, just pretty words to say. I thought I knew, but now I know that rose trees never grow in New York City.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Arts Edge. You've been listening to our show on education with the Radio Tale, Waking Up in Grad School. If you've missed any portion of tonight's show, you can always go to our website at www.cjsf.ca, and all of our shows are archived here at the station for 1 week following original airtime. And just go to the schedule, scroll down to the show of your choice, and you will find the podcast there.
Stay tuned to Wave Station, coming up next.
And I'm going to leave you with one final tune. This song is in keeping with my Irish ancestry. It's a song from American singer-songwriter Steve Earle. I don't believe he wrote it. I think it's more of a traditional song out of Ireland. It's off his 2000 CD, Transcendental Blues. Here we go with Galway Girl. Have a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week at the Arts Edge. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend.
I took a stroll on the old long walk of the day. I met a little girl and we stopped to talk on a fine soft day. And I asked your friend, what's a fella to do?
Do you want to be? Tune in to The Arts Edge with Annie Roach, Saturdays from 6 to 7 p.m. and hear stories of artists and educators, writers, painters, actors, people from all walks of life. Hear how people are making their lives happen. You can find us at CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Mountain, We're at TELUS HD channel 7014, or you can find us on the internet at www.cjsf.ca. Tune in to The Arts Edge and be inspired.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. Simon Fraser University, the 1960s. In the earliest days of SFU, a renegade, unlicensed radio station begins broadcasting around campus. 1974. Volunteers establish the Simon Fraser Campus Radio Society, which operates CJSF to this day. 1985. The station obtains a cable license, bringing CJSF to a wider audience. And we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.
Oh, here's a sin. Coming to you live. Well, actually, it might be recorded. What does it matter? From SFU's campus and community radio station, on top of Burnaby Mountain in Burnaby, British Columbia. Can you spell redundant? CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.
Good Lord, we're so professional.
Yes.
Hi, we are Liars.
I'm Javin, and I play keyboards and sing in Young Pacific.
I'm Nathaniel. I play guitar and sing in Dead Soft.
Since moving to BC, I've been a huge fan of Emily Carr's art.
I wrote a lot of it on the road. That was our first real.
You're listening.